Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer at WNYC, and let's talk about that deficit reduction plan. Forget about 30 issues in 30 days. Here come 30 issues in 30 seconds, as proposed by the two chairmen of President Obama's bipartisan deficit commission to reduce federal deficits by nearly $4 billion over the next 10 years. They are recommending raising the full Social Security benefits age to 69, 62 if you prove you can't work, limiting the mortgage interest tax deduction to homes under $500,000. That's one version. Eliminating it altogether is another version. Eliminating the child tax credit, adding a public option to health reform, placing caps on malpractice awards, taxing more health insurance plans as Cadillac plans, cutting the number of troops serving in Europe and Asia by a third, cutting the military budget overall by $100 billion by 2015, a pay and benefits freeze for the Pentagon civilian workforce, raising the gasoline tax by 15 cents a gallon. Remember when Ross Perot way back when suggested 50 cents a gallon? Well, at least they got back to 15 cents in this. Raising the Social Security payroll tax for higher income earners, but lowering the corporate tax rate to 26% and lowering the top personal income tax rate, that's right, lowering it to 24%. Yes, all of those things, and actually many, many more that will give Republicans, Democrats, and others howling fits for the rest of their lives if they let them. Some kudos are probably in order to the Republican chairman, Alan Simpson, and Democratic chairman, Erskine Bowles, for a pretty audacious display of walking past politics to address a major national problem as if we were one nation. That's not done very much these days. They are hitting these third rails of American politics willingly, though you may love or hate the particular proposals. But I just wanted to start the conversation with a small appreciation of their spirit before we inevitably start ripping the thing apart. The president, speaking in South Korea today, wants Congress to think before speaking.
Before anybody starts shooting down proposals, I think we need to listen. We need to gather up all the facts. I think we have to be straight with the American people.
With us now for a first blush look at these proposals is Felix Salmon, finance blogger for Reuters. We'll also touch on President Obama at the G20 in South Korea, where he is today. Hi, Felix. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, our phones are open for your first reactions to this deficit commission reduction, deficit reduction commission chairman's list of proposals, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We also have a poll on which of these you would accept on our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Felix, do you also want to appreciate what Simpson and Bowles are trying to do here, even before getting into the specifics, or should we be a little more cynical or suspicious of all of this?
Well, the first thing to note is, as you say, this is just the two chairmen. This isn't the deficit commission itself, and it looks almost certain at this point that the commission is not going to be able to get 14 of its 18 members to agree on anything. So at this point, the report comes down to what the two chairmen think might be a good idea. And a lot of it is about shrinking the size of government, shrinking the size of, you know, government expenditures, bringing taxes down. It's a kind of Republican way of attacking this problem. And it largely avoids the by far the biggest contributor to the long-term deficit, which is Medicare. There's no real plan for keeping Medicare expenses down, and that's
it does mention strengthening the Medicare Advisory Board, Medicare Payments Advisory Board, I think it's called, which was put into the health reform law but watered down. Is that the thing that Sarah Palin and others called the death panels?
I think it is, yes. But you know, this is typical of what you find in this report. There's lots of talk about setting up commissions and looking at advisory boards and punting the decisions over to someone else at some vague point in the future, and we'll trust that they'll be able to do something. when it comes to the really big numbers. You know, there's lots of small little things they want to do. You know, literally they're talking about we should start printing on both sides of the piece of paper and our copiers, and that's going to save money. But obviously that's not going to make any difference to the deficit.
But what about some of those big things that I mentioned that are politically so toxic? Raising the Social Security age for full benefits to 69 for most people, unless you can prove some physical reason why you can't work after 62.
Let's be clear about this. That comes in 2080. That doesn't come for another 70 years.
2080. So it gets phased in gradually? I mean, it's 67
very,
now.
Very gradually, yes.
It's because it's 67 now, right? So that's, 70 years to add a two-year difference. Okay, and the home mortgage interest tax deduction, various versions of that, as I understand it in this, eliminating it altogether, eliminating it for homes more than $500,000.
That is a great idea, as I've told you in the past. It's long since time that we got rid of that. It makes no sense at all. But again, it's not going to the really big issue is always going to be healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely, if we can get rid of mortgage interest tax deductions, I should hope that we can find 14 people on this commission to at least agree on that.
Well, that's perhaps not going to be so easy right there. Would that be phased in? What about people who currently have mortgages that they took, calculating the affordability using that assumption?
Yes, these things have to be phased in, but it's surprising how quickly these things can be phased in. And all you need to do is look at my home country of the UK, which eliminated mortgage interest tax deductions about 10 years ago, quite quickly and without nearly the amount of pain that everyone thought that it would cause.
Why would they lower the top personal income tax rate to 24%? Remember, the debate that Congress is now having is whether to let the Bush tax cuts expire and have the top earners pay 39% instead of 36%. They would lower it to a 24% top personal income tax rate?
That's a really good question. And why also would they put a cap on the total amount of revenues that the government would be allowed to raise in taxes? They're saying that the government is never allowed to raise more than 21% of GDP in taxes, as though limiting the income is a way of reducing the deficit. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
What's the current average, do you know?
It depends how you calculate it. But yeah, the problem is, again, that the tax revenues have to rise to keep pace with the increasing proportion of the population who's over 65 and therefore eligible for Medicare.
Raising the gasoline tax by 15 cents a gallon. Raising the Social Security payroll tax for higher income earners. These are all tough things to get through the Republican part of Congress, but it seems to be the Democrats led by Nancy Pelosi who are howling the loudest so far, yes?
Nancy Pelosi has been howling. I think the Republicans are happy to howl a little bit less loudly just to make them seem a bit more open to the concept of fiscal rectitude, because that was how they did so well in the midterms, was by campaigning on small government and that kind of thing. But yes, when push comes to shove, if they're ever asked to vote on these things, it's going to be very hard for them to vote to raise any taxes at all.
All right, let's see what some of our listeners think about this first draft of how to reduce the federal deficit. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Jacqueline in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello. Jacqueline, are you there? We'll come back to Jacqueline. Let's try David in Sunnyside. Hi, David.
Good morning. I have not looked at details of this, but it strikes me that the existence of the commission at all and its broad suggestions that would change the architecture of debt would create, in fact, an alternative decision-making forum to Congress. If the questions at issue are decided by the commission, then Congress would not have the decision-making role and obstructive role that it has at the moment.
Well, let's not throw out all the checks and balances in our democracy.
I agree, but, you know, the commission has touched the third rail of just about everything. And if the debate becomes about what the commission is suggesting, then it becomes a whole new ballgame.
Yes, and the debate certainly will become about that, because there is supposed to be at least the possibility of a vote on this commission's massive recommendations in the lame duck session before the end of the year. But obviously, the executive branch, the president, can appoint a commission like this, but they can only recommend. You don't want the entire federal budget and the tax structure and everything else to be overhauled by the wave of the wand of a chief executive. Obviously, we want the democracy of the Congress, imperfect as it is, to get involved here, and that's about to happen. But Felix Salmon, finance blogger for Reuters, is one of the ideas here to try to get Congress to take an up or down vote on the entire package rather than debate every little piece of it and make changes here and there that may or may not, you know, blow apart the whole bottom line of it?
Well, that would be wonderful if it were possible. I think one of the ideas is that the only way you can ever make a dent in something as big as this, you know, the federal deficit, is if a bipartisan commission of Republicans and Democrats is small enough to be able to come to an agreement on what should be done, and then the two sides of the aisle come together in Congress and say, listen, there's stuff we don't like here, but this is very important, and we have to pass something, and this is something to pass. Unfortunately, what we've already seen is that this commission is not going to come to Congress with a proposal of lots of things which should be done. This commission is not going to come up with a proposal at all. There's no way this commission is going to be able to agree on anything, which is why we are reduced to looking at what two guys who happen to be the chairman of the commission think might be a good idea.
So
but it
that's
doesn't
your
carry nearly the same weight.
That's your prediction, is that the 18 members of this commission, bipartisan commission, are not going to be able to come to agreement on something like this, and they're going to issue no report ultimately or no firm recommendations?
That's exactly my prediction. And not even all 18 of them. We're not even going to be able to get 14 of them to agree on anything.
So what do you think we are going to see on or around December 1st? What will they issue under those circumstances?
Your guess is as good as mine, but I'm not holding my breath to see anything at all coming out of this commission.
Scott in Soho, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I was just curious. I mean, you're throwing out these numbers, but the real impact on the regular citizen, like somebody that owns a three-bedroom house and drives a car, that, you know, when the gas prices went up to $3.50 a gallon, it had a tremendous impact on people's ability to buy things and grow the economy. And taking away a mortgage credit and adding a gas tax, I think it's gonna shrink the economy, and then there'll be even less money going in. I mean, and I don't think this whole problem will be solved until term limits are done.
Well, at the same time as they're proposing those increases, they're proposing to reduce the top rate of personal income tax, as we mentioned, to 24%, and also decrease the top, you know, personal income tax rate to 24%, and also decrease the corporate tax. And I'd have to look at what that decreases to, but decrease corporate taxes at the same time. So I don't know if it adds up, you know, to crippling the economy or paving the way. They're obviously trying to reorder a lot of things, Scott.
Well, I think what the real problem, I think, is just that government doesn't do a lot of things efficiently, and they've taken on so many things that it's just money is wasted. I can look in New York City. You know, we have a big budget deficit in New York City, and we're building, I mean, literally, bike lanes that very few people use, little parks in the middle of Houston Street that haven't been completed in 2.5 years. I mean, there's money wasted everywhere, and I think that's where we need to be looking first instead of – and that's on a local level. That's not even looking on a federal level.
And
but there's so much waste.
It's reduced the corporate tax rate to 26%, just so I get that number out there.
Yeah.
And also what the liberals don't like is that it would limit –
where we need to be looking first.
As Felix said –
and that's on a local level.
Sorry, we're getting a little feedback there, Scott, so I'm going to have to let you go. But reducing, and maybe you should come back to this, because this is huge, isn't it, Felix, this idea of limiting the amount of taxation or federal spending to 21% of GDP? Liberals hate that.
Well, I wouldn't say liberals are not the natural. They don't naturally think that big government is a good thing. And, you know, ever since Bill Clinton, you know, there has been this strong liberal idea that if we can do things more efficiently and shrink the size of government, that's fine. There's no problem in having a government where tax revenues are less than 21% of GDP, so long, you know, and that budget is balanced and everyone's happy. It's the problem is, why would you cap it? If the expenditures go above that because of the big picture demographic issues, you know, an aging population, increasing medical care costs, that kind of thing, then you're going to need to implement new taxes somewhere along the line to pay for that. It's simple mathematics, especially from a deficit commission. And I think one of the problems here is that, as your caller was saying, there's this idea that simply by cutting government waste here and there, you can make a big dent in the deficit, and you can't. That's not ever going to be workable. The government discretionary spending is not a problem here going forward. The problem is entitlements. It will always be entitlements, and specifically Medicare. And unless and until you can do something about health care inflation or about demographics or about giving everyone Medicare once they reach 65, all of this stuff about, you know, spending money in the middle of Houston Street is neither here nor there.
Before you go, and my guest has been Felix Salmon, finance blogger for Reuters, with a first look at the Deficit Reduction Commission chairman's report. This is overshadowing, of course, what I originally thought we were going to talk about today, which is President Obama with the G20 industrialized nations, the leaders in South Korea. Here he is speaking to them this morning.
The most important thing that the United States can do for the world economy is to grow, because we continue to be the world's largest market.
Is that language of growth any different for Obama after the election and the mandate to focus even more on jobs?
No, that's what he's always been saying, and what he's trying to do there is fight back against criticism from the rest of the world that the United States is essentially what they're called engaging in a currency war, that we're devaluing the dollar in order to try and get some kind of competitive advantage against other countries. And what he's saying is, look, you are the countries, you need us to grow, and if that means a weaker dollar, then so be it, because if we don't grow, the entire global economy is going to slow down.
How are other countries likely to react to this deficit-cutting bombshell, even though it's just from the two chairmen and, as you say, may not get through their own commission, or is it irrelevant to them?
I think it's largely irrelevant to them. What they're worried about mainly is monetary policy rather than fiscal policy. They're worried about the Fed much more than they're worried about what Congress may or may not do about taxes and spending. What they really care about is the dollar, and they worry that the dollar's getting weaker, and that's bad for them.
So is there a big negotiating goal for the U.S. at this G20? Anything to keep our eye on that'll be particularly newsworthy coming out of this?
Well, any hint that the G20 might actually come to a consensus or agree on something would be wonderful. When they had the summit in London in 2009, there was this shock and awe that they could really come up with a long list of things that they agreed to do together and spending and grouping together to help the global economy. And all of that seems to have fallen apart at this point, and they're sniping at each other and they can't agree on anything. So if you get a communique out of the G20 which says anything substantive at all, that would be an achievement, I think.
So we'll get the G20 and the 18 members of the Deficit Reduction Commission together in a room, and they'll all come out and say, I'm sorry, we couldn't agree on anything. Felix Salmon, finance blogger for Reuters. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And by the way, we have a new poll on our politics website this morning asking which of the president's deficit commission proposals you would support. You can go to itsafreecountry.org. There's also a link there to a comments page on which you can keep this conversation going here on day one after those proposals were released by Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we continue our November food series with how to get your picky eater children to try foods that they turn their heads at. Stay with us.